Hey, hey, beer fans. Welcome to Experimental Brewing with Denny and Drew. I'm Denny Kahn.
And I'm Drew Beecham, and in the background is Britton.
Somewhere out there.
Now, together, the two of us who are actually humans and talking, we are the authors of Experimental Homebrewing, Mad Science in the Pursuit of Great Beer, and Simple Homebrewing, available at all your finest retailers. Between the two of us, we have over 50 years of homebrewing experience. I'm the guy known for weird beer and strange ideas.
And I'm the guy who's known for questioning the conventional wisdom and checking it out.
And then going and rebrewing the same beer many years later.
Over and over again.
On today's episode, we're going to get a little bit of your feedback. We're going to head into the pub to talk a couple of stories before we race off into the brewery to go talk about what we've been doing. And then we're going to stop into the lounge with Ryan Holt, who's going to talk about how you can turn brewing into something philanthropic.
Doing good for other people, not just yourself.
There you go.
But before we get into all that stuff, here's some messages from the fine people who make this show possible. This episode of the Experimental Brewing Podcast is brought to you by you, our listeners. Go to experimentalbrew.com to help support us. Click on the Patreon link to donate whatever amount you like to the podcast and our charities. Click on the Brew Your Own Magazine link to subscribe to BYO. Or click on the AHA link to join the American Homebrewers Association. Part of the proceeds from those will go to help support the podcast. And thanks for your support. When I'm done brewing, I want to be done brewing, not waiting around for my wort to cool. With the Hydra, the Corny Pillar, and the other great chillers from Jaded, I can be done when I'm done. No more waiting 20 minutes for the wort to cool enough to add Whirlpool hops. No more messing with cleaning and sanitizing counterflow or plate chillers. With the super fast immersion chillers from Jaded, you can chill your wort in minutes without all the hassle. Jaded chillers aren't just works of art, they're the fastest, most effective chillers you can buy. Check them out at jadedbrewing.com. Welcome back. Glad y'all stuck around, and we have a few announcements before we get going on the other stuff.
That's right. Go and double check your feed because the Brew Files is rolling. We have new episodes coming out. Denny and I waxing philosophical about American wheat beer. Whoever knew you could wax philosophical about American wheat? Well,
yeah,
we did.
Really? Yeah.
All right. And don't forget, you can support the podcast by leaving us a review in Apple Podcasts. You can click the AHA or BYO links on the website and by going to Patreon and pledging a buck or two or more to our charitable cause, which for this part of the year is...
It's almost decided. We have a charity in mind, and we have to just do a couple more checks on things before we announce it to you. So stay tuned. Next time, we will have a new charity. I promise you.
There you go. All right, and now, as always, it is time for our favorite segment of this week and every week, which is your feedback.
He only likes it because he can make his voice do that.
I know. That's a magic power. All right. Our one piece of feedback this week comes from Jeff Hardgrove, who wrote in about the winter beer promotions. You'll remember a couple episodes back, I talked about Wild Parrot doing their 30 Days of Christmas and trying to get people in because... frankly, we just crossed over the real fallow period for breweries, you know, which is basically from Thanksgiving to St. Patrick's Day. And Jeff writes in to say, hey guys, I like the 10 days of Christmas ideas from your local brewery, Drew. My local brewery, Diamond Spring Brewing, their answer was to capitalize on their beautiful outdoor space, especially since their indoor area is tiny. They achieved this with the Polar Beer Club. Show up between certain hours on Sunday afternoons, and you get a dedicated beer server, discounted pints, and critically, a free Polar Bear Club patch when you make 4 meetups.
Ooh.
Even with the recently passed New Jersey legislation relaxing some brewery restrictions, there are still plenty of restrictions, so programs like this are a fun experience if you like sitting outside in a New Jersey winter.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking, man. That could... It can get a bit challenging at times.
By the way, Jeff provides the absolute perfect example of why patches are weird. Patches have magic. We imbue like some sort of effort into these pieces of cloth and sit outside and drink beer in order to get a patch.
Yeah, well, I've got a whole drawer of them that I've never gotten around to sewing on, you know, so I'm not sure that would be exactly the incentive I needed.
Well, I don't think that Cub Scout uniform will fit you anymore.
Well, that's true, you know, but boy, wasn't I cute.
I'll leave that for other people to answer. Well, there you go. Thank you, Jeff, for your email. As always, you can email us your feedback at podcast@experimentalbrew.com, or you can text us at our number 626-7651-ALE, and we will read your feedback, take your suggestions, and, you know, go running around like crazy madmen.
As if we don't already. Okay, let's go have a beer, huh?
Absolutely.
We'll meet you in the pub right after these messages. The 7th annual Pink Boots blend from Yakima Chief Hops is now available in homebrew sizing on the Yakima Chief website. A portion of the sales will be donated to the Pink Boots Society in support of its mission to provide educational opportunities to women and non-binary individuals in the fermented and alcoholic beverages industry. This year's Pink Boots blend consists of Ottenham, El Dorado, HBC 638, and Idaho 7, with the expected sensory notes of berry, citrus, stone fruit, and herbal. Place your order today at yakimachief.com/pink-boots-blend and brew your own Pink Boots Blend beer. We're back, and we are sitting here in the Experimental Brewing Pub at the corner of everywhere and nowhere somewhere in cyberspace, and we're having a couple beers. And Drew's got a pretty interesting one there.
Right, so my beer for this week is the Wild Parrot Brewing Company's Massac Brothers Czech Dark Lager. Now, the beer itself is like, I think, if I remember correctly, it's 5.4%, and it's kind of a nice roasty, toasty, dark lager. A little more roasty than I think a proper Czech dark lager would be. But the real reason why I want to mention this is I want to demonstrate just how much of a dang nerd I am.
You don't need to do that. Everybody knows.
I know, but still it's fun to give a chance to explore. So Massac Brothers Dark Lager was inspired by the fact that right next to Wild Parrot Brewing Company is the old Warner's Egyptian Theater that later became the Uptown Theater, which closed in the 1980s and is still just sitting there empty. The landlord wants something like $22,000 a month for the space, which is absolutely absurd.
Oh, yeah.
But John from Wild Parrot got a chance to go inside the brewery. You can still see all the details in there, like the Egyptian-style ceiling and whatnot. But also, very importantly, the old 1925-1926 asbestos proscenium curtain that closed off the stage, because it also, they did vaudeville there, too. And the screen. And what's really great about this curtain, and Denny's got a picture of it in front of him,
yeah,
is it is filled with old-timey ads. It feels very much like when you go into, like you go into an old coffee shop and the mugs are filled with ads for local businesses, or the placemats have ads for local businesses. It feels very much like that, but on a big giant scrim. And what caught John's attention and then my attention was that one of the ads in there is for Massac Brothers Malt and Stone Crock and Bottle Supplies, located just down the street on Colorado Boulevard. So again, this would have been 1926. It was obviously somebody running a shop, a homebrew shop, so that you could go make beer because you couldn't buy it. Right? And so we went and he gave me this information, and me being me, I ran with it. And there is a whole dang document that I have put together from research of who, what, and when the Masick brothers were, how they got here to Pasadena. They were Czech immigrants, which is what fired up John's imagination to make a Czech dark lager. And I know now when they were born, where they were born, when they died, where they're buried. And I also have a permit from 1926, when the mother of the family, Mrs. Masick, pulled a billboard for $80 to advertise the shop.
Kind of cool. So how's the beer?
Well, like I said, the beer is wonderful. It's a nice 5.4, a little bit roasty, but also very nice and toasted. Almost less like a Czech dark lager and more like a lagered porter. And, you know, it goes down pretty smooth. So, cool. Yeah, but I thought this was funny, and it gave me a good chance to sort of run around and dig up information out of the census and out of permit records and archives and show that probably in an alternate timeline, I did actually go become a historian.
So you actually have more time than you claim to have.
Well, no, the problem is all the time I have is filled up with doing stupid stuff like this. All right, like literally, I went to the brewery, he showed me this photo, and that night I spent like 2.5-3 hours going through online archives to go pull up information and then writing it up. I'm a dork. What do you want?
Yes, you are, but no, never mind. I'm not going there.
All right. So I'm having a nice, lightweight, dark, lagered porter in a sort of a way. Denny, you're kind of not doing that at all.
No, I'm kind of like going the other direction. Our weather here is finally, like we had like a normal winter. Instead of being like warm and dry and all that stuff like it's been the last few years, we actually got back to cold and wet and some snow and ice and all that kind of like normal winter in Oregon stuff. And that kind of like made my passion for quadruples come to the fore. So I've been going through quadruples comparing, and I have some favorites, and I'm having a La Trappe quadruple today, which is definitely one of my favorites. One of the things that I like about it is it still has the full flavor that you would expect from a quadruple, but it's kind of like lighter colored and lighter bodied, so that it is extremely easy to drink, maybe too easy to drink, compared to the other two that are three that I've been drinking, which are the Valdu Grand Cru, the Straffa Hendrick Quadruple, and Rochefort 10, excuse me. I'm just really, really digging the La Trappe Quad. They make a wonderful triple also, but the Quad, like I said, it has kind of a light body to it. The color is a little bit lighter, reddish brown. I would almost say that I'm getting like some cinnamon notes from it, but not because there's cinnamon in the beer, definitely. Just a phenol from the yeast, I assume. But it's a really, really good beer. And if you are looking for a quad that is a little bit out of the ordinary, I would say definitely get your hands on this La Trappe and give it a try.
See, now I think you've cursed me because I just looked up at the weather forecast. And while today is 65 degrees and bright and sunny, tomorrow and the day after is rain and thunderstorms and in the low 50s. Thanks. Wow,
And that's exactly the weather we're getting up here, too. It's hitting the whole West Coast. So that's why I just went out yesterday and stocked up.
Yeah, I think my version of stocking up is going to be digging into the chest freezer over here and going, oh, I got that. All right. Yeah, well, to me, I think with the La Trappe beers, as you mentioned, I think they do have that certain level of digestibility.
Yeah,
And kind of very much in line with how I think of Westmalle.
Right.
Like Chimay, I always think of as being fluffy. Westmalle, I always think of being very drinkable. Rochefort, hearty.
Right. Yeah, I made another attempt at my Westmalle triple. I should probably save this for the brewery, but I'm not, recently. And in looking up the specs to make sure I was getting as close as I could, I was almost surprised to see that it comes in at 39 IBUs, right? That's more than Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. And so I had to pick one up yesterday and give it a try. And it was a fairly fresh one. The date on the bottle was March 2nd, so it was just brewed in the last few weeks. And, man, let me tell you, that hop character came through, not just in terms of bitterness, but there was just that wonderful floral aroma, you know. Another great beer, one of my all-time favorites. But I'm drinking the quad today.
Drinking the quad from another brewery, but shut up. All right. So, quick reminder as we continue to sip our beers here, that we are currently publishing Experimental Homebrewing online on the website. Every month, one chapter until we get to October, which is the 10th year anniversary of the book, which is still sort of frightening.
More than frightening.
Yeah, and I think I'm trying to remember. So we've published chapter 2 now, and chapter 2 is all about recipe design. What I think is funny is we've been going through and reviewing these chapters and looking back at what we wrote. How weirdly consistent we are.
Yeah, well, Hobgoblin of Small Minds, right?
There you go. So go and look. You can find those on Experimental Homebrewing. There's a link up at the top that will take you to all the chapters, but you can also find them by scrolling down. So now, on to the news.
Right, and we each have a story for you today, and I'm going to let Drew go first.
Yeah, so y'all will remember that we had Wayne Wambles on a little while ago to talk about Maduro Brown, right? And Wayne has been with Cigar City Brewing Company since Cigar City Brewing Company started as kind of their head brewmaster, head brewer, however you want to put it. When Cigar City sold to Canarchy, which is the whole Oscar Blues, kind of conglomerate that then later got sold to Monster, Wayne became sort of the R&D brewer, head brewer for a lot of those brands up there. And I think he went up to North Carolina, if I remember correctly. I was working there. Well, a couple weeks back, as we're recording this, Cigar City / Monster let Wayne go after 16 years of brewing for them, which was kind of a shock, I think. And you actually saw the online beer community sort of, a lot of people responding like, what the hell? I don't know if you saw that, Danny. I did.
Yeah, I did. No, that's very much the reaction. It was a big shock to everybody. Not so much that Monster changed directions, but they would let Wayne go if they were having anything to do with beer at all.
Yeah, and so, because again, I think when you think of Cigar City, you think of Wayne. At least I do. Yeah, if you know anything about the brewing side of the house. So that was a couple of weeks back. Wayne was let go, which, like I said, kind of made everybody go, what? Wayne has since announced that he is, at the moment, doing independent consulting, Wambles Consulting. So if you want to get a chance to actually pick his brain about how to operate a brewery, then that seems like a pretty reasonable way to go. Pick one of the best minds about it. But just after that, or actually really just like about a week ago as we're recording, Cigar City's brewing staff in Tampa, almost all of Cigar City's brewing staff in Tampa, where the brewery was founded, were let go. I think it was about 15, 16 brewers, leaving a very small skeleton crew for a very large brewery to run. And what has been coming out of that scene in Tampa, what the news has been that Monster is moving all the beer production. So all your High Lie, I don't even know if they're going to do Hunapuma anymore, but High Lie and all the other big brands that that Cigar City has are moving their brewing completely now to Colorado, North Carolina. They had some, like the High Lie that we see out here on the West Coast is brewed in Colorado. So all the beer production is shifting out of state away from Tampa, and the Tampa brewery is going to become, the words that Monster used, a flavor R&D brewery or project.
Yeah.
Now, I'm very creative with understanding corporate BS. I've been in corporations for long enough now in my life to really kind of understand what marketers mean when they're lying to you. And I'm not entirely certain what that means. Obviously, Monster has their hard energy drinks and hard seltzer lines and all that sort of fun stuff. Maybe that's what they're doing, but I don't get it. I don't get why you would close basically a very iconic brewery for, probably pennies.
You know, they must have a reason, but it escapes me. Yeah, well, yeah, that's exactly it, you know.
Yeah, but it just makes me sad. But again, this is also kind of what happens over time when the further you get away from the people who had their thumbs in the pie when everything was being baked.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. And now from Cigar City's kind of weird, not really closure, kind of closure thing, we go into an actual closure, which is really sort of the passing of a torch.
Yeah, it really is. The Steelhead Brewery, brew pub here in Eugene, Oregon, shut down recently after 32 years in business. I don't believe it was as much an economic thing as it was the owner, Cordy Jensen, deciding it was just time for him to retire. He's been in the business a long, long time. His family has owned restaurants and clubs and things like that around here for 85 years, and he's been in the business since he was a kid. And I think maybe he just kind of decided it was time to start taking it easy. But the Steelhead was the first brew pub here in Eugene, which is a beer mecca, and one of the first in the United States, for that matter. 32 years is a long time to have it run. And for the first 15 years or so, I was probably in there very regularly. Great beer, great food. And then suddenly we had so many choices that I kind of forgot about the Steelhead, and I'm regretting not being able to get back in there. But it is a real passing of an icon, and I think that a lot of people are going to miss it. And one of the important things that came out of the Steelhead was that's where Terry Farrendorf got her start, and we've mentioned her a few times. Terry has been a longtime brewer. She was working in Great Western Malts for quite a while. She is a real industry leader, and she founded the Pink Boots Society and a huge advocate for women in brewing. Unfortunately, she was going to come down she was going to try and come down, which is not unfortunate, and have a pint at the Steelhead before they closed, invite people to come and have a beer with her. But they sold out a beer before she could get here. they have an offshoot called Mackenzie Brewing that is a packaging brewery. And the guy that's taking over the Steelhead location is going to turn it into what he calls an old-fashioned steakhouse. But they're going to have a tasting room in it to kind of like pay homage to the memory of the Steelhead. And they'll have Mackenzie Brewing beers in there, so you can still kind of get it. But you won't be able to sit there and have a pint and look through the window at all that gleaming stainless steel brewing equipment like you used to. Some great stories coming out of there that I won't go into because I'll protect the innocent.
That's because of legal reasons.
Yeah. But at any rate, it is the passing of an icon, and that's life.
Yep. I mean, I still remember Steelhead being responsible for one of my favorite earlier IPAs, which was Bombay Bomber.
Oh yeah, definitely. That was one of my favorites.
Yep, that was a good. That was a great IPA, and actually, in a lot of ways, not all that dissimilar to modern IPAs. Different hop choices,
right?
But yeah, it was an early progenitor of a very light hand with crystal in terms of the IPA, and it was very, very crisp.
Yep, it was a great beer. I don't know if Mackenzie Brewing will put out that or anything like it still, but I guess we'll see.
Yep. All right. So there's your pub stories for today. There's our beers going down in the glass. But it probably ought to be time for us to go talk about what we're doing to make more of those beers.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll see you in the brewery. The next generation of countertop home distillation systems is here. The all-new AirStill Pro from Still Spirits is a revolutionary still that will look right at home alongside your everyday kitchen appliances. This small batch 2-in-1 distillation system operates in either pot still or reflux mode and allows you to craft high-quality light and dark spirits at home. No hoses, no complicated assembly. just plug and play. The AirStill Pro column cools itself with a built-in high-powered fan. The Still Spirits AirStill Pro is available now at your favorite homebrew retailer. Learn more about the AirStill Pro at stillspirits.com or check them out on Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube. Finished our beers and we moved over to the brewery, and we're going to let you know what we've been doing lately.
Yep. So while all the stainless steel is burbling, I still need to get my brewing back up and into business because I've got a festival coming up. So I've got back to back to back batches of beer planned so I can get beer ready for the Southern California Homebrewers Festival. It's going to be the, you know, the quick turnaround time versions of all my beers. But I wanted to announce that one beer is going to be returning. One very special beer. I've already got the potato flakes for it.
Oh, no.
Yes. That's right. There will be a return of the clam chowder saison.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Why? Why?
The thyme is growing in the garden. The Bob's Red Mill potato flakes are sitting right behind me on the brewery bar. It's going to be time. It's going to happen. Now, I'm still actually debating. Denny and I had talked a little bit about this in the background a couple weeks back when I was first kicking around the idea that the clam chowder saison, I think the thing that weirded everybody out about it was, oddly enough, the clams. Who knew? All right, for people who don't recall, because you have better things to do with your life, the clam chowder saison beer started off as a dare from Denny, trying to get people to respond to our interview questions for the Homebrew All-Stars book. That beer was effectively a potato saison. It used potato flakes and was spiced up with thyme, black pepper, and bay leaf. All traditional things you'd find in New England clam chowder saison. And now without the final addition of the clam juice, the beer itself was actually kind of this nice herbal, you know, sort of pleasantly spring-like saison. And actually the potatoes kind of give it a creaminess, which I thought was interesting. I wasn't expecting them to be creamy. But now, of course, we come to the infamous part, which is one bottle of clam juice into the whirlpool. Right? It was whirlpool yeah. Clammed. And that always kind of seemed to throw people off. So I was debating with myself whether or not I actually go and we do the clam juice, or if we find a different way to get a little bit of brininess in it, like a little addition of salt.
Well, it's not clam chowder saison without the clam juice.
I know, but so I'm going to throw this out there to the audience. I'm going to run a poll on our socials. Clams or no clams? We'll see what people respond to.
Clams. Clams. Everybody say clams.
All right. And then the other thing I've been doing is I've been getting ready for our Mayfair competition. We have 400 entries we have to judge. God help us. If you are in the Los Angeles area and have any interest in judging beer or being a steward or anything else like that, please go to competitions.maltosfalcons.com and register to judge beer. Help us. And then lastly, the other thing, tonight as we're recording this, I am running the 100th happy hour that the club has put on.
Good on you, bud.
Yep, 100. And this time we're doing it partially in person. I and a bunch of people will actually be at the brewery. And I had to go take all this audio gear I have for this dang podcast and figure out how to use it to pump audio into a Zoom chat room so that people could actually sit there at home with a four-pack of beer and also listen along with us. So that was fun.
You did a great job, man.
Yeah. Yay. So there you go. That's what I've been doing. Now, Dincenzo, what about you?
Yeah, I actually brewed twice in 1 week. Can you believe that?
What are you, a young brewer?
No, I was a motivated brewer, man. And I actually did two brews without screwing anything up, so I'm pretty happy.
I don't believe that, particularly since I know one of them was kind of a party.
Yeah, well, I know, and that's what really is amazing, that nothing screwed up there. I don't know if I've mentioned before, but Cold Fire Brewing here in Eugene asked me and my friend Brant, who has been on the show with us before, to do a brew with them, just because they're wonderful guys and thought it would be a fun brew day. We decided that we were going to make a rye Doppelbach, and decided that we would brew a pilot batch out here on the G70. And so Dan and Stephen Hughes, the two owners of Cold Fire, came on over. Brant, who just lives nearby, came by. And we put together a rye Doppelbach, about 20% rye. It used Weyermann Munich and Vienna, and there was some Cararoma in it, which I've never used, but Stephen just absolutely loves it, so I'm curious to see what that does. And some Carafa 3 for color. I hope not too much, but I kept the same percentages that he uses in his Doppelbach. And then about 20% rye. We went back and forth on the amount of rye. They wanted to go more like 10. Brant and I were like, no, you need 20 in there to really, really get any kind of flavor out of it.
Anyone and, shocked that the homebrewers went, no more?
Yeah, right. Well, and since it was my house, I won, and we went for the 20% rye. So I went with S189 yeast on it. Stephen usually uses 3470, like he does for, I think, probably most of their lagers. And he hadn't used 189 before, and I really like it. It's a great, great yeast for malty lagers. Makes wonderful pilsners and stuff like that, too. But my perception is it might even be a little bit cleaner than 3470. I sometimes get a little bit of a lemony flavor from 3470, and I've never gotten that from S189. So anyway, it has been bubbling away there at 55 degrees for about the last week. Yeah, we brewed it a week ago, so it's been there for the last week. And today I just started ramping it up to 72 for the diacetyl / fermentation finish rest. I don't usually have a lot of trouble with diacetyl, so I crank up the temperature mainly to make sure the fermentation is finished, but that has the same effect as diacetyl rest because it stimulates the fermentation, right? So if there is diacetyl in there, it gets consumed. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how that's going to go. And then a few days later, it just happened to be March 19th, which was the 26th anniversary of the first time I ever brewed. And I try to make some sort of anniversary batch every year. So I brewed batch number 611. And it was a West Coast IPA. Who's surprised? I used some ingredients I had around that I wanted to get used up. There was some British pale malt from Montana Craft Malt. Oh, boy, I think that I used some of the crisp Maris Otter number 19. I think that was the main malt. I put in 2 pounds of Weyermann Vienna that I had laying around left over. And I needed another pound of grain, so I threw in a pound of Breese Bonlander Munich. So kind of a mutt when it comes to the grist.
The definitely not paying attention to my ideas of simplicity.
No, but you know, I think that the flavor may come out as simplistic. Simplistic, I love that. More straightforward than it sounds like. On the other hand, it may not. Hop-wise, I bittered with Columbus, and then I had a bunch of partial bags of hops left over from when I made the Denny Kong. So the hop bill is going to be a lot like that was, you know, Simcoe, Citra, Mosaic, Cascade, cryo and non-cryo versions, lots of dry hops. So we'll see. Now, here's the amazing part. I put 6 3/4 gallons into an 8-gallon fermenter. And you've heard the stories of what if this happened the last couple times I've done that, right? With the airlock shooting up into the rafters and being shattered and stuff like that. Drew, I want you to know I put on a blow off.
You actually remembered.
Yeah, well, I figured, you know, I may be stupid, but after five times, I will eventually learn.
I may be stupid, but I'm not crazy.
Or maybe the other way. But so anyway, so it's out there. The blow off is hooked up. It's bubbling away. I haven't actually experienced any blow off yet. I used BRY-97 naturally because it was around. I would have used 1450, but I didn't have any on hand, and I didn't have a chance to drive into town to get any before then. So what the heck? It's the beer that counts. So anyway, we'll see what that is, and when it gets all done, I'll send you some of both of them.
There we go. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, you'll send me the beers you're making for the homebrew festival.
Absolutely. And the hot sauce.
The hot sauce. I told Paula about that.
Yeah, I totally forgot, by the way. Also in the brewery, I finally got around to bottling up and tasting the Hatch hot sauce I made.
And?
Fantastic. Fermented garlic, fermented onions, salt. A couple spices and the Hatch chili peppers, just a little bit of heat, not actually like a super, super hot one because it means Hatch chilies, right? They're not right, super hot sure. chilies. And you know what? It's just a really nice, pleasant hot sauce. It's got just enough heat to it to be good. Just enough salt to give you some extra flavor, just enough lactic acid character to be a little zingy, but nothing too over the top. So easy peasy.
Oh man, I'm looking forward to that. Believe me.
Yep. All right, and then of course we'll include notes on all the recipes in the on the podcast site. Do you have a name for the 26th anniversary IPA?
It's 26th anniversary IPA.
Well, see, my stupid brain was sitting there thinking, oh, you know, this is batch 611, so it has to be something about telephone troubles.
Yeah,
and for anybody not old enough to remember, 611 is what you dialed to report that a payphone was broken.
Yeah. A what?
Yeah, right. I know.
Where do I put the money in my cell phone?
So there you go. There's the brewery. There's us being dorks. Let's go talk to somebody who's doing something good with his beer instead of just being a dork.
All right. We're heading to the lounge. We'll meet you there.
The ultimate all-in-one electric homebrewing system is here. The new Grainfather G40 can produce up to 11 gallons of beer and features all the latest advancements in homebrewing technology, including wireless control so you can monitor your brew day from the Grainfather app. With an innovative new grain basket design that improves workflow, reaching mash efficiencies of 75% or more is easy. The 3,300-watt heating element brings your wort to a boil quickly without any scorching, and the large hop plate filter guarantees that no unwanted grain matter or hop tube reaches your fermenter. Every G40 comes standard with a high-powered built-in pump that can handle temperatures over 200 degrees Fahrenheit and a full 3-year warranty that guarantees that you will be able to keep on brewing no matter what. The new Grainfather G40 is available now at your favorite homebrew retailer or online at grainfather.com.
Welcome to the lounge. We are sitting here in these comfy chairs, and today we are going to be talking to a gentleman by the name of Ryan Holt, a longtime home brewer who decided that he could do more with beer than simply drink it.
Yes, you can cook with it.
And you can do good with it.
There you go. Yeah, and so we're going to sit down and talk to Ryan, one about how he got into brewing, and then more importantly, how he got into the idea of doing philanthropy. I think I said that right.
Philanthropy.
Yeah. Never count on me to pronounce anything correctly. All right. So, yeah, sit back, have a beer, unless you're driving, and listen to this interview with Ryan Holt.
Welcome to the lounge. We haven't been lounging in a while, and we are fortunate today to have our guest Ryan Holt with us. Ryan runs a project called Brewlanthropy, and I will let him tell you about that in just a minute. But before then, hey, Ryan, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. It's great to talk to you guys.
So tell people a little bit about what Brewlanthropy is.
Sure, yeah. Well, I've been a home brewer since, you know, the mid-90s. And I was a teacher for quite a while as well. And about 10 years ago, I stopped teaching to help my family run this family business that my parents had started. And so I was kind of missing out on that community connection that I had when I was teaching, since I went to, you know, from being face-to-face with kids and parents and doing that every day to, you know, working on a web-based business where I'm just on the phone and emailing. And so I kind of missed that connection that I had with my community. And so I was looking for a way to kind of get back out there. And so I started working at a brewery about 10 years ago here in Salem, Oregon, and which was cool. I helped them kind of expand and teach their staff about beer styles and, you know, get them educated on how to pour properly and do all the right things. And then the guys there that owned the brewery had me start teaching some home brewing and beer styles classes in the evening to the public. And so we sold tickets for those, and the classes were selling out, and that was a good way for me to, you know, use some teaching skills and not teach fourth and fifth grade anymore, but talk about beer, my other passion. So that was pretty cool. So it helped me, you know, connect to the community. And so, and then from there I started I decided I wanted to try to raise a little money for breast cancer awareness during one of the months where they raise money for that. And I reached out to some friends at Yakima Valley Hops and asked them if they'd donate. They had a hops a hop product at that time that was specifically for breast cancer awareness. It's called the 1-in-8. It was an Idaho Gem hop variety. And I asked them if they would donate the hops for this beer that we were going to do at this little nano brewery here in Salem. And it was just a 2-barrel kit. And so they said, yeah, no problem. And they sent us the hops, and we brewed the beer and invited the community to kind of come down and celebrate with us and support. And the beer sold out real quick. And so I kind of got the wheels turning, and I figured, all right, what if I could do this on an even larger scale? And so from there, I decided to see if I could brew six different charity beers in the upcoming year. And so this was in 2022. And so I reached back out to Yakima Valley Hops to see if they would donate all the hops for 6 charity beers, if I could pull that off in one year. And they were on board right away and loved the idea. So I reached out to Imperial Yeast next. And same thing there. I knew I was going to have some incentive to kind of persuade these breweries to work with some random home brewer. So having all the ingredients was definitely a plus. And so after that, I was introduced to Brian up at Link Malt up in Spokane, Washington. And same deal there. I told him about my idea about brewing beer for charity with some commercial breweries. And yeah, he was on board, and they were ready to start sending pellets of grain my way. So I brewed that in 2022. We brewed the first 6 beers. I started here in Salem with Chicha Brewing, and we supported a nonprofit here in Salem that supports families and children called Family Building Blocks. And we raised $3,500 for this charity, and we brewed that was the first beer that got it going. And then I bounced down to California for a little bit, cause I grew up down there in Long Beach. And so one of my good friends that I went to high school with and was in a band with in the '90s. And, he's a brewer down there in Orange County. And so we brewed a beer down there, and supported a charity called the Dream Street, Foundation, where they provide summer camp opportunities for kids with disabilities who normally wouldn't be able to go to those because they need, you know, medical assistance and nursing assistance throughout. So this camp helps provide those opportunities for those kids, which was pretty cool. Yeah, and then after that, I was
by the way, back up here in Port. I just want to interject real quick and say, why does it seem that every kid who grew up in Long Beach in the 90s had to have a band?
Yeah, it kind of seemed like that, man. Yeah. That was a good time to be down there, I think, and be, I think music was just, you know, kind of going. It was Orange County and LA County back in that time, early 90s. There was a lot of bands getting going, and, you know, Sublime kind of helped explode that, and No Doubt out in Orange County kind of helped explode that too. And I think it really, I don't know, we were kind of transitioning away from the metal scene, you know, over on Sunset Boulevard. So it was kind of a different vibe in Orange County and Long Beach. So we had a good time though, playing a bunch of backyard parties and, you know, playing some shows, and it was cool. It was a good time.
Yeah. The world needs more skanking to the beat.
That's for sure. Yeah, oh man.
All right, so after that interlude.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, after that beer that we did down there, came back up and brewed with Ex Novo up in Portland, and we were able to raise a little over $2,000 for the Oregon Children's Theater. And when I wrote the Zymergy article at the end of last year, I was able to reach back out to some of these charities to see how they used the money that was donated from these collabs. And this one was especially cool because one of the directors there at the program for that nonprofit at the Children's Theater got back to me and told me that they were able to send a few hundred kids to a Broadway performance in downtown Portland and on kind of a scholarship fund. And, you know, it was, most of these kids had never even seen any kind of performance like that before. And so it just kind of gets you thinking, you know, if we're able to inspire a few kids with a theater performance, what they'll end up doing with that, you know, as they grow and get deeper into the arts, if they were interested in it. So that was kind of a cool one. Yeah. And then after that, I was down in Eugene at Ninkasi, and we were able to brew on their little R&D system there. We just brewed 5 barrels of a Mexican style lager. And, my daughter was a student down there for a while, and, she was an EMT as well in Eugene. And so she was able to work with the group called CAHOOTS, which is a crisis response team that helps when firefighters and police officers aren't as well equipped to handle with certain emergencies that are out on the streets. And so we wanted to support that. And so the Whitebird Clinic there in Eugene was our charity of choice for that beer, which was pretty rad.
Yeah, they're a great organization.
Definitely. Yeah. I tried to get some more info here in Salem about what's going on with starting a program like that here, and I think they're just kind of dragging their feet. It's a pretty big undertaking, but I think we had the funding, but it's just not happening quite yet. But yeah, what's going on in Eugene is really amazing.
So you've done like 12 of these so far, I see from your website.
Yeah. Actually, in the planning, number 13 is going to happen. Actually, we're brewing tomorrow here in Salem, back at, Salem Ale Works, where I used to work and teach those homebrewing classes. They went under right around COVID time, and a new owner bought the brewery. He's a restaurant owner here in town already. And so we're going to brew back over there now. And support a friend here who owned a tap house out in Turner, Oregon, and who was a good friend. He passed away from cancer a couple of years ago, and so this owner actually who bought the brewery just recently bought this tap house as well. It's a converted church, 120-year-old church out in Turner, Oregon. It's called Angel Share Barrel House, and so he bought that as well. And so we're organizing this one to support a brain cancer charity to support this friend of ours, Chad, who passed away a couple of years ago.
So, do you and the brewery just kind of like come up with the charity that you want to support? Is that how it works?
Yeah, pretty much. We, you know, once we get starting to talk about doing the collab, we kind of just figure out a charity that we're passionate about and, or one that we have a connection to. We usually try to keep it pretty local wherever that brewery is. Like when I brewed the Zoigel House collab last year, the brewer there and I both had a connection with our kids being treated at Dornbecker's Children's Hospital. And so back when they were younger. And so we brewed Dortmunder for Dornbecker, and we supported the Children's Hospital there in Portland. So yeah, it's just you know, what we feel passionate about and what we have a connection to.
That's great, man. That is really great. So I mean, I assume that this is just kind of like open ended, right? You're going to run with it for as long as you can find partners and keep getting the supplies.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm enjoying the work, and I've actually just at the beginning stages of turning this into a nonprofit myself. So. Once I get a few more things in line here, I'm going to try to attract some more ingredients and product donors and see how big we can get this to grow. I've talked to a few people at the Brewers Association, and they are pretty well. They were saying that there's not really anything like this going on in the industry, and pretty much everybody that I talked to is saying the same thing. Just kind of the method that I got it going and how it's been rolling. So. Yeah, I'm just going to see where it goes and keep going as long as I have ingredients to support it and breweries who are wanting to participate.
And do you still homebrew too?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I don't think I can give that up. I am actually looking to start brewing smaller batches, though. I kind of, about 7 or 8 years ago, I decided to step up my little system. I had an igloo cooler system that I had, you know, put together over the years, and I was brewing that in between that 5 and 10 gallon range, and then I stepped up to an electric system, and it's a little too big for what I want to do now. I'd actually like to start brewing like 3 to 5 gallon batches now. Back when I bought that larger, they're 20 gallon kettles, but I have 2 14 gallon fermenters, and that's just too much beer. Back then, I had a lot more people who were coming around and helping me drink that beer, and which was cool and it was fun. But as I've gotten a little older here, and some of my friends aren't drinking as much anymore, and I'm not drinking as much anymore, but I still want to keep brewing, and I want to experiment with some more styles, and I just want to do it on a smaller scale. So I'll be talking to you, I'm sure, Denny, about this. So.
I've got a 15 gallon system, and I seldom brew more than 6 gallons on it because you know that's all I need.
For sure, yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, it's funny. We've talked about that transition before, where it seems like a lot of homebrewers, at least the ones who stick with it, they start at like the 5 gallon level because that's what everybody tells you to start at. Although I guess these days also 1 gallon, 3 gallon, and at some point you get like that thought in your mind that's like, I need to be real. I need to brew big. Right. And then totally. Inevitably you get to the other side of it and you're like, wait, never mind, that's too much.
Man, I mean, I don't know how many times I've heard people say, well, geez, you know, you can brew 10 gallons in about the same amount of time you can do 5, and it's like, right. Yeah, but then you've got 10 gallons of beer to deal with.
Seriously, yeah, it's too much, you know.
It is, man, and you got to package it all and do all that stuff. Sure. And so
but
Drew is right, it is an interesting evolution, and you know, we have both definitely gone through it.
Yeah, I think the 3 gallon size is pretty rad, actually. You could still, there's still plenty of beer there, but finding that size all-in-one system is kind of tricky, so it'll probably end up being more like what you're talking about, Denny, that kind of 5 gallon or 6 gallon size.
Yeah. I find that 6 gallons gives me beer for the losses from transferring and sampling. You know, then I can still end up with almost a full keg.
Yeah, it's perfect. Yeah.
Depending on how much I sample.
So, yeah. Ryan, let me ask back on the topic of the charity aspect here. Mm-hmm. So, what do you think is the best way to approach a brewery if you've got an idea for doing something for charity? Because, like, when I've talked about breweries before, there's always the question of, one, you brought in the great idea of, like, here, have ingredients. Ingredients make it easier. But I've always run into like the problem of like sometimes you get people going, well, but wait, I'm supposed to give away the money I make from the beer. So, like, how do you approach that with breweries, and like, how do you grease those wheels?
For sure. Yeah. Some of these collabs, I've had a connection with the brewers or the owners already. And so we're able to just kind of jump right in, and they're willing. I've kept the charity donation portion of it. You know, the sales are all still happening from the brewery. You know, I don't get involved with the sales at all. And I've never put a specific dollar amount expectation on these breweries either. So that's kind of kept it a little more flexible. That's kind of how I went into it with a lot of these breweries. We were coming off the COVID years, so I didn't want to put a lot of pressure on these breweries for a specific dollar amount. And so they're handling the sales completely. And after they're done selling the beer, then they pretty much get to decide how much of the proceeds they're able to afford to donate. What I'm going to start doing starting this year is actually showing each of the breweries the cost of the ingredients that were donated up front so that they can see, you know, how much the malt, yeast and hops would have cost them. And try to talk a little bit more about sort of an anticipated donation amount, just so we can kind of get the ball rolling. And I'm in the process of kind of working up a little, just a sheet that kind of keeps everything in order so that the breweries know, you know, what was donated and what we talked about in the beginning. Cause sometimes we brew these beers and then, you know, the donation and the sales don't happen until, you know, 6 months later. And so, or more.
Right.
And so just, you know, all this time has passed. And so it's easy to forget, you know, what we decided or what we discussed early on. And so, yeah, I'm just trying to, I want it to be real transparent and still not put a lot of too much pressure on the brewery. You know, they're the ones who are stepping up and adding an extra beer into their lineup and participating in this. So, I still want to keep it pretty flexible and easy. So, yeah, it can get a little tricky though when it comes down to the donation portion of it. There's obviously some where I've felt like, yeah, this is amazing. That donation amount is killer. It's like that's more than I was expecting. Yeah. And then occasionally some of them are like, oh, that wasn't very much of a donation from, you know, 10 or 15 barrels that we brewed, but you know, hey, it's better than nothing, you know? And so
$500 $500 donated is better than $500 not donated.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure.
And so you have this back and forth with the breweries. I mean, has there ever been a moment where you kind of look at each other and you like, this is too ambitious, or yeah, like, did you ever get yourself into trouble?
No, it hasn't happened yet. I am dealing with a brewery now from one of the ones that I did last year that hasn't made their donation yet, and they're kind of dragging their feet and making some excuses. I don't want to call them out specifically, but it happens, and I'm kind of sticking with them and saying, hey, we agreed to this and this, and you know, hopefully you guys can you know, honor your commitment that and you know, make the donation still. So that's kind of why I kind of want to put this all out more in the beginning, and so that the expectations are all kind of established and right. We have kind of a record of it. So it's been a learning process for me as well. So, but well, it's been good. Like you said, yeah, any donation is better than nothing.
And you know, it's funny because like back when Sierra Nevada did their big thing for raising money for that devastating fire up there in Chico.
For sure.
Marcus and his Black is Beautiful project. It's amazing to me. Like, you know, the vast majority of people who sign up for those programs, they fall through. They do exactly what they said they would when they signed on the dotted line. And then there's always one or two people who you have to name and shame.
Totally. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully it doesn't get to that point. Hopefully they step up and decide, hey, this is something that we agreed to do and we're going to follow through with it, you know, but yeah, we'll see what happens. So, it's been cool. I'm just going to keep rolling with it and see where it takes me and see if I can, now that I'm turning it into a nonprofit on my end as well, then I'm hoping I can attract some more donors, for ingredients and, you know, just kind of see if I can get it to grow a little bit more. So
there you go. So I'm guessing, do you have a goal in mind? Are you going to try and have one of these running at all times, multiples of these running at all times? What's the end game?
Yeah, man, I don't know. I don't really have an end game. I'm just trying to keep it as flexible and open as I can.
I'm just floating. You know,
yeah, totally. You know, I'd love to brew with every brewery in Oregon if it happened, you know, but that's kind of pretty a wild expectation, you know, maybe getting to 25 of these collabs and then see if I'm still into it and see if it's still going good and then kind of you know, and see if it's see if the expectation is still being met, and you know, we're still doing some good things, and then, you know, just as long as I can keep these. So at this point, I have these three ingredient companies, you know, Yakima Valley Hops, Link Malt, and Imperial Yeast. And if I can keep them happy and they keep donating ingredients, then I'm going to keep contacting breweries and see if they're interested, you know. So, yeah, no real end game at this point.
Well, and you guys,
that's a great way to approach it, man.
Yeah. Well, and you got to think that at least for, you know, given the way that modern brewery tap rooms work, right, and, you know, and you always want to have new beer to draw the customers back in. Yeah, so somebody coming to you with an idea that says, hey, I got an idea for us to brew a beer, plus it's got a charitable component to it, it's actually kind of a win-win for the breweries.
Totally, it really is. Yeah, yeah. And it helps if they really use their social media and invite the community. I found that some breweries aren't as good at that as others. And so the word doesn't get out there as much as it should. I'm trying, you know, as best I can with my social media to help spread the word and promote what we did. But it isn't always that much on the other end, you know? And so we really have to use as much as some of these breweries aren't into social media, and I'm not into it sometimes too. It brings me down. But it's like a necessary evil, right? We need to use it just to get the word out there, because everyone else is using social media to see what's going on. So.
Well, and let me ask, since, you know, most of the people who are going to be listening to this probably aren't going to get up the gumption to go start a charitable effort, as somebody who is a home brewer, and now that you've had the chance to go around and run around, do these collabs and see beer being brewed at all these different places, what are like your top lessons that you've learned doing this that apply to your brewery, your home brewery?
Oh, to me as a homebrewer? Oh, great question, man. Well, the first thing that has happened is I've been homebrewing less since I've been doing these beers. I can tell you that. Last year, I think I only brewed six or seven times last year. And this year, I haven't brewed once yet. And we're already, you know, coming up towards the end of February. Whereas normally I'd be brewing, you know, 20 or at least 20 times a year. And so, yeah, so that's kind of taken a hit there just time-wise. You know, it's definitely cut into my home brewing, which has been okay. And I've been kind of, you know, ready to take, you know, a little bit of break from it anyway. And working with these different breweries, kind of, I'm still in and around beer and brewing. So, and when I work with these breweries, we're collaborating on a recipe together a lot of times too. And so they're getting input from me, which is cool. And, so yeah, it's been cool. I don't know about like technique or style, like bringing anything back into my homebrewing. But it's actually cool to get around and see all these different brewing setups at all these different breweries, because every one of them is very different. You know, we're all kind of doing the same thing and doing the same process, but every single brewery has a completely different setup.
Right.
Well, yeah, man. That's one of the reasons why I always tell people that one of the best ways to learn how to brew is to go brew with others, because then you can see all the goofy things that other people do. And definitely. I think the big lesson that you take away from it is Denny's motto, which is malted barley wants to become beer.
Yeah, that's sure. Right.
All right.
Definitely. Yeah.
Denny, any other questions we should ask?
Man, I think we've covered it. Ryan, I just want to say good on you, buddy. The world needs more people like you.
Right on.
Ever since we've started this podcast nearly 10 years ago, we've always supported a charity and asked our listeners to help us do it. And I'm glad to see somebody else using beer to do good things for people. It's an attitude that the world needs a whole lot more of.
Yeah,
and I'll also mention, you kindly sent us some of your beers that I have not had a chance to drink yet, but as soon as I get off the treadmill when we're done here, that's going to change.
Excellent. Yeah, right on.
I am looking forward to
it. Cool, yeah. The Higher Purpose Lager there from Steeplejack, I think I sent you, and then the one from Apothecary,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Ale Apothecary looks like one that Drew will be drooling over.
Woo-hoo. Yeah, that one turned out real nice for sure. Yeah, that one. I don't know if you've met Paul and Stacy out there in Bend, but they're doing some really cool things, real experimental stuff, and mixed fermentations, and so yeah, we brewed that one. It's a saison style, that Paul kind of used an old Peter Bouckaert recipe and kind of changed some things up on his own. And so it turned out real nice. He added some heather flowers at the end, and it was barrel aged on Brett for quite a few months and then can conditioned. So, and that one's going to support a local homeless shelter out there in Bend, which is pretty
cool. Oh, that's great, man. That is great. Yeah. Well, Ryan, thanks for your time. Thanks for the beer. And thanks for being one of the good guys.
Well, and remind people where they can find information about your project.
Yeah, for sure. I keep everything on the website. So it's oldstandbybrewing.com. And actually, or they could bring up brewlanthropy.com. It'll take you to the same spot. And then on my Instagram, I try to keep that updated as well. And that's just Old Standby on Instagram. So, yeah, it's all out there. It's all the donations are out there and the charities that we support. And, just all transparent for everybody to see and support as much as they can. So, and Denny, I think I'm going to be down there in Eugene next month. Dana from your homebrew club invited me down to talk about all this with the Cascade Brewers. So,
cool, man. I might actually have to go to a meeting for a change.
Yeah, there we go. That'd be cool. Then we can actually meet in person. I think it's the last, the end of March, I think, is when I'm supposed to be down there. So, that'd be cool if you could make
it. Right. Cool, man. I will definitely put that on my schedule and do my absolute best because I'd love to meet you in person, Ryan. So
yeah, totally. That'd be great.
Thanks again, buddy. And
for sure.
Hope to see you soon.
Yeah, sounds good. Right, great talking to you guys. Yeah, appreciate it.
Man, I am impressed with that guy's attitude.
Level of organization?
Well, yeah, that goes without saying. But just the whole idea, you know, that beer can do good. I mean, you hear people saying that all the time, but it's nice to see somebody who is actually taking it to the limit and walking the walk.
He's taking it to the limit one more time?
Don't go there. And the beers he sent us were darn good, too.
Yes, they were.
Oh, my. Okay, I think it's time to get the heck out of here. So please stick around. We're going to come back, and we're going to get into our new segment, the Y-East Style Spotlight. And we're going to wrap things up and get out of here. Everybody, welcome back. We're going to wrap this baby up, and to do it, we're going to start with a brand new segment that we are calling the Y-East Style Spotlight. The way it's going to work is Y-East picks the yeast, gives us some information about it, and we give you some tips for brewing the beer. The first one we're going to take a look at is Y-East 1217, and it's great for West Coast IPA, which is what we're going to be talking about today. Y-East says, above the front doors of North Park Beer Company in San Diego, California, reads the inscription, "The life so short, the craft so long to learn." Yet it becomes clearer by the sip that brewer and owner Kelsey McNair is at the forefront of his craft. The beer is Denny Kong Double Dry Hopped West Coast IPA, and the fellow masterminds behind the recipe are Denny Kong and Drew Beecham, of course. To showcase the symmetry between the bold, bitter characteristics of the traditional West Coast IPA and the evolving hopping techniques to create an intense fruit note in smooth, hazy IPAs, they opted for Y-East's 1217 West Coast IPA yeast for the recipe. 1217 is favored for its ability to allow all other ingredients to shine. Flavor is balanced, neutral, with thorough attenuation, a flexible temperature range, and good flocculation. It's also an ideal choice for any malt and hop-forward American ales, Scottish ales, and specialty styles where featured character ingredients are the focus of your beer. As a legacy strain in YEAST Culture Collection, having been isolated 40 years ago, 1217 is the well-proven secret for many craft brewers worldwide, and available this season for home enthusiasts. Find the Denny Kong recipe and more inspiration at yeastlab.com/resources. And let's get brewing.
So in other words, it's a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, it is. As many clean, attenuative yeasts are, you can use it for a lot of styles. But it's those characteristics that made it so great for Denny Kong and West Coast IPA in general.
Yeah, and in my mind, like just before we get into talking about West Coast IPA, I think it's important to note, like, take all that stuff that Wyeast just said there. And I think really the things that you take away from it is it is a absolute monster fermenter that clears well and allows other flavors to shine through. And in fact, it clears better than 1056.
Oh, so, definitely so.
And so if you're somebody who's really worried about clarity, 1217 is your monster choice.
Right, and it's got a really crisp finish to it, which is important when you're brewing a West Coast IPA. You know, you want to get something that has not too much mouthfeel and body to it. So with that in mind, here are a few points for brewing a West Coast IPA. Keep it light, both in color and body. 5% sugar is a good idea. When we made the Denny Kong, we used a grist that was, what, maybe like about 80% Pilsner malt and 20% Vienna, something like mm-hmm. that. Worked beautifully. So ditch the crystal, keep your wort light and crisp.
By the way, I want everybody to note, that phrase just came out of Denny's mouth.
Well, for this style, absolutely. I've learned my lesson, and that's what you want to do if you're going to be brewing a beer like this.
All right. And then on the water side, you know, we talk a lot about water and how important it is, but also at the same time, show some restraint because you're going to have a lot of bitterness in this beer. And I kind of feel like if you overdo your salts, like if you try and push the sulfate too hard, then with particularly how crisp the back end on this beer is going to be, your hop character actually gets a little too over-accentuated and becomes a little too much.
Yeah, I'm almost like a one-dimensional bitterness, if that makes any sense.
Yep.
And speaking of bitterness, go for a 1-to-1 BU to GU ratio. If you're not familiar with that, that's a bittering unit to gravity unit ratio, meaning if you have a 1070 beer, you want to shoot for about 70 IBUs. And definitely don't skip the kettle edition. This is not a New England IPA. This needs a firm bitterness in the background, although as Drew just pointed out, you don't want to overdo it. You can also use pretty much every hop technique and process and type that you've ever wanted to try out. Besides the kettle bittering edition, you can do, your standard late editions. You can do whirlpool hops. You can do a hop stand. You can do dip hopping. Make sure that you dry hop. You can use pellets. You can use cryo. You can use extracts. Whole hops, I suppose, would be great. I'm not sure, though, that that's the way you'd want to go for this style of beer.
Yeah, exactly. You want to kind of minimize the vegetation, maximize the oils, and maximize the bitterness.
Exactly.
So the other thing that you might want to try, if you are worried about hop creep, neither Denny or I are particularly obsessed with the idea of hop creep, because we usually keep our beer cold and drink it fast.
Right.
But if you are worried about hop creep, then this would be the time to also look at ALDC, which is an enzyme that shortcuts the formation of diacetyl. You know, so remember all those bad root beers that came out with a lot of diacetyl? Yeah, that's hop creep in a nutshell, causing diacetyl because you've got tired yeast going to work on sugar and not cleaning up after themselves. So ALDC to kind of prevent that. But like I said, this yeast is a monster fermenter. And boy, can it make a lot. But West Coast IPA is really good at it.
Yeah, definitely so. So there you have it. That's our first of the Y East Style Spotlight series. We'll be back with another one in the next episode. We're waiting to see what yeast Y East is going to choose for us to come up with tips and a recipe for.
And by the way, if there are any of those Y East strains that you want to know more about, let us know, because we have inside knowledge.
Yeah, right. Let us know. We'll ask them about it. And I'm hoping we can even get somebody from Y East to come on every once in a while to talk about these. But they're a little bit microphone shy. So speaking of tips, I got a quick tip for you, too. And it's based on this beer that I just brewed, an IPA. You just imagine that, would you? And the tip is know your water. And when to treat it and when not to treat it. Because the best water treatment is always the least water treatment. I've been brewing IPAs now for 26 years here. And what I have learned is that my water is perfect for anything other than a very light-colored beer or a very dark-colored beer. So I know that in the mid-range there, like about where IPAs fall, I don't really have to do much except bump up the sulfate a bit, which I do by adding a heaping teaspoon of gypsum right into the boil. And you know what? For my water and my tastes, that comes out perfectly. So what I'm saying is learn about your water, learn what it needs, and more importantly, learn what it doesn't need and when to walk away and leave it alone.
You have to know when to salt it. No, when not to. I don't know. I lost it.
I know. I was waiting for the rhyme there, man. What's he going to rhyme with salt? No, when to salt it. No, when to malt it.
No, when to malt it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Kenny.
All right. Well, now, as we've proven, something other than beer, because God knows we need more beer in our life, right?
That's right.
So I've got actually three things, and I'm going to go through them real quick here. One of which is I've been enjoying the science fiction series Resident Alien on TV, starring one of America's funniest people, Alan Tudyk, who, quite frankly, feels very Danny Kaye-esque in this show. Just that sort of wild, kind of wild and wacky physical performance and comedy. That's available on Peacock and a bunch of other streaming services, Resident Alien. They just started season 3. It's a lightweight, fun show about what happens when an alien comes to Earth and is trying to find his device so he can kill all of humanity.
Okay. All right.
It's quite a northern exposure with the aliens. All right. The other one is more Nero Wolf stories. I got a chance to go into one of my favorite used bookstores here in L.A., and boy, did I grab more Nero Wolf stories. All I can tell you is if you haven't read the Nero Wolf books in the past and you like fun, lightweight mysteries, you're missing out. So go grab some Nero Wolf stories from Rex Stout. Back when a gross 1/8 of a ton was considered rotund and unbelievably large in America and grotesque. It's about 280 pounds. So very, very good series of books there. Very classic. And the last one, and unfortunately this is one I can only do for me and y'all can't do, is go and find your local revival theater. If you're in a town of any size, you have a revival theater somewhere, because I got to experience going and watch a 35 millimeter print of Chinatown on the big screen at the Egyptian, here in LA. And you know what?
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. There's just something kind of nice and classical about going and watching an actual film on an actual big screen.
Yeah, we have a couple of those here.
Yeah, and particularly watching Chinatown again, all I can think is, what the heck did they do to Faye Dunaway's skin to make her look like she was a porcelain doll being lit from behind?
Every time I think of that movie, all I can think of is Jack Nicholson getting his nose slit.
A little chickadee. Yep.
So I guess that's about everything we can think of to blather on about. So thank you all for listening to Experimental Brewing. You can catch all of our latest adventures and writings by going to our website, which is experimentalbrew.com. Don't forget to follow us on X, where we're at EXP Brewing. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. Drew hangs out on the homebrewing subreddit and the Slack homebrewing channel. You can find me mainly hanging around the AHA discussion forum and Facebook, but I'm kind of like bouncing around all over the place. If you want to ask us a question, suggest topics, recipes, experiments, or even just rant and rave, and that's okay too, you can email us at podcast@experimentalbrew.com. Or if you want to get a hold of each one of us individually, I'm Denny at experimentalbrew.com, and he's Drew at experimentalbrew.com. And of course, we have technology. You can send us a text or leave us a voicemail at 626-765-1AIL. That's 626-765-1253. So until next time, remember to always brew experimentally.
Or brew wacky. And we'll see you on the next episode of Experimental Brewing.